Citizens and Emergency Preparedness. So I was in front of Senate Labor and Business, speaking to the Economic Development and Tourism, and then I was in front of the Budget and Transportation Committee. No, Randy was not there. No, Andy wasn't there that day. Yeah, I only would like to.
Well, I think he's trying to.
He's also just supposed to be working like 0.3 time, and he's working.
Is it really long?
Okay. Yeah, he's on the, Willamette Falls and the Indian Heritage Area Coalition. He's actually on there.
That would be awesome.
So that would be awesome.
Because I really enjoyed that meeting.
Well, he does that in the fall too.
Are we ready? All right, we will start the Metro Council business meeting for November 21st, 2019. And I'm going to ask Councillor Craddock to provide the safety briefing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's become a nice tradition. So please note that we are on the third floor. So this is all for your safety in case there's an emergency. So we're on the third floor. In an event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out the door in the northeast quarter, go down the stairs, and go out onto the plaza on the second floor. We'll meet in that courtyard. And then in an event of a medical emergency or a fire, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the desk on the second floor. The nearest defibrillator is on the stairs leading to Grand Avenue just below us, and the fire extinguisher is in this corner. So hopefully we'll all be safe if there's an emergency. Thank you.
Thank you. We're taking safety very seriously all throughout the agency. We want to make sure that anybody who is visiting knows where to exit in case or what to do. All right. We'll move on to our resolutions. We have resolution number 19-5054, which is for... Can I get that... It's not in my script, sorry. For the purpose of approving and authorizing the execution of the second amended and related visitor facilities intergovernmental agreement. Is that correct? All right.
Yes.
All right. This is the second time that we have seen this. Do I have a motion?
Second.
Been moved by Councillor Lewis and seconded by Councillor Stacy, is there any further discussion on this? No? All right. Clerk will call the roll. Oh, there was a backside.
Sorry.
That I just missed.
Okay.
I see. That's why it wasn't making any sense.
So should we? No, my motion still stands.
Well, how do I back out of this one?
Is that resolution?
I think she could withdraw her motion.
Oh, okay.
To do
yeah, there we go. Sorry, folks. Didn't know there was a backside to the piece of paper.
Second will follow that directly.
I'll withdraw my motion.
And my second.
All right. We'll come back to that. Thank you.
Very good.
Sorry for the confusion. All right. We are now moving to the resolution. The first resolution is actually number 19-5054 for the purpose of approving it. This is still correct, right?
Yes, I think it's time to have Andy.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right. It was the correct resolution. We just didn't get the presentation. Got it. Okay. For the purpose of approving and authorizing the execution of the second amended and restated visitor facilities intergovernmental agreement, we will now have a presentation by staff, Government Affairs and Policy Development Director Andy Shaw.
It did seem to fly right through.
You were well on
the way.
Ready to go, but let's hear it.
So Andy Shaw, Director of Government Affairs at Metro. We're very excited to have before you today the amended and restated visitor facilities intergovernmental agreement. As we talked about at work session on Tuesday, this is the second time the city, Metro, and the county have worked towards changing this intergovernmental agreement. It dates back to the early 2000s, and this is the agreement through which we determine how to prioritize and spend resources that come from the tourism industry, hotel motel taxes and vehicle rental taxes. It has stood the test of time through good and bad times to fund our visitor facilities and programs to attract conventions to Portland, supporting a multi-billion-dollar tourism industry here in Portland. We were just over at the City Hall yesterday where they had a first reading. It looked like there's very strong support there. We understand the county is scheduling this same agreement for early December to follow on the action of this of City and Metro if you do approve this today. So we're very excited to the new priorities in this include, as we talked about on Tuesday, making additional investments in some of our key facilities in the region, shoring up the reserves that are there to ensure that we can pay off the existing debt and new debt that we take on, making new investments in addressing homelessness, especially in the downtown area, and attracting additional conventions to town and putting more resource into that promotion of Portland. So we went into a lot more depth, I think, on Tuesday with the entire bucket system and all the new elements there. So I'll pause and just ask if you have any questions, but as staff, we're here to urge you to adopt this today.
Any further questions? We had a lot of conversation.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment.
Yes, go for it.
I just want to say thank you, Andy, and to all those in the audience that are our partners on this to make this happen. This is really a remarkable agreement that's been in place, I don't know how many years.
Since 2001.
Yeah, so it's pretty significant. And I know that there are other regions in the United States now that are following this example, this kind of agreement. And so it's really unique, or it was unique, and it's really remarkable how creative you've been in creating the different buckets, we've called them, or with the Pac-Man chart that describes how these funds will be distributed. So I just want to say thank you, and to all of you in the audience that have worked on this. It's not only supporting our tourism industry, but it's also now making funding available for Multnomah County to use to support homeless people.
So well, we certainly stand on other shoulders who established this system back in the early 2000s, then leaders of the county metro and the city. And it was a very large team effort of staff at Metro, staff at the city, staff at the county, leaders of Travel Portland over the last couple of years to work through all the priorities and come to an agreement that everyone thinks is fair and wise.
Thank you.
Any further? All right. Oh, Councilor Chase.
Well, I would just also thank you for this and the folks that have worked on this, because I think this is a really nice package in terms of understanding, first and foremost, that we have to be investing in our convention center, in our convention center hotel, in our expo, in our P5. These are the kinds of facilities that bring people, that improve our own quality of life here in our region, but also bring people from out of our region and bringing those dollars to our region and leveraging a lot of hotel room nights and spending that happens when people come to our region and see this, and get to enjoy this wonderful place. And so that is absolutely critical, and it's rightly investing in all of those kind of functions. We're even adding a function to better collect and more efficiently collect the tax. So the better business component of it is also in there. I think it rightly also makes sure that we're taking care of folks in our community. And so the added component of really addressing our homelessness and strategies that will support people in permanent supportive housing, in very low-income housing, that is, you know, a really welcome component in this that says we're not only going to make sure that we're taking care of this, these businesses in a very responsible way, but we're also going to take care of the people that are part of our community and make sure that we're doubling down on that. So I really appreciate the years of work that's gone into this package and how it's come together. Thank you.
Anybody else? I just want to thank all of the work in OMA as well. Ashley, thank you so much for everything. I know that there's a lot of red line edits to go through and figure out what was in, what was out over the years. So thank you. I'm trying to decipher all of that. And thank you, Andy, for continued perseverance. All right. That, do I have a motion?
I move resolution 1950-54.
Resolution. Motion.
And I'll second.
Oh, okay. Councillor, it's been moved by Councillor Lewis and seconded by Councillor Craddock. Clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. Thank you. It passes. All right. Thank you, for everybody, for walking through that. I don't know why it got so hard. We will move on to two very important resolutions in the implementation of our affordable housing bond measure, resolution number 19-5009 and resolution 19-5010, both resolutions for executing local IGAs with our partners. So I will ask Emily Lieb to come up for a presentation on both of these resolutions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here today to mark two milestones in the implementation of the housing bond. Our first two IGAs for implementation with the cities of Beaverton and Washington County. We have staff from both of those partner jurisdictions here today to say a few words. So I'm going to start with a brief staff presentation and then invite them up to join me. Both of these jurisdictions have created local implementation strategies that align with the requirements established by the Council in the Metro Housing Bond Program Work Plan. And both jurisdictions have had their local implementation strategies reviewed and recommended by our Community Oversight Committee. You are being asked today to approve IGAs that describe the terms and conditions under which housing bond funds will be dispersed throughout the full period of implementation to those two jurisdictions, and their local implementation strategies are included in the IGAs as an exhibit. So I'm going to present a brief overview of what's in each jurisdiction's strategy, what's in the IGA, and that will conclude my presentation. Beaverton is eligible to receive $31 million in housing bond funds to implement 218 new affordable homes in the city. And they will also be eligible to receive $576,000 in administration funding to support those implementation efforts. They conducted extensive engagement in the spring to inform their local implementation strategy. It reached over 200 people. Of those reporting demographics, 69% of those engaged were people of color. And that informed their full local implementation strategy, which includes a plan to develop four projects, two of which are already identified. Their phase one project, the Marianne Apartments, and the El Monica site that was acquired by Metro's TOD program. They also, as with other, all of our other partner jurisdictions, have an MWESB or COVID participation goal. It's the first time the city of Beaverton has set a goal of this nature, and their goal is 20% aspirational goal for COVID participation, as well as they are in the process of building an effort to monitor workforce diversity on their projects as well. Beaverton City Council approved the IGA, which includes their LAS, on November 12th, and now it's coming to you for approval. Clackamas County is eligible for $116 million in housing bond funding to develop 812 homes. Of those, just over half will be developed and owned by the Housing Authority. The remaining funding will be awarded to third-party developers for the development of the remaining units. They're also eligible for $2.4 million in administrative funding to be administered annually throughout the duration of implementation. And their local implementation strategy was informed also by an outstanding engagement process led in partnership with Unite Oregon that really reached a truly diverse and historically under-engaged groups of folks. They have included in their portfolio plans to develop a site acquired with their Phase 1 housing bond funding of $2.7 million, which is in the IGA, already removed from that $116 million amount. So you'll see that IGA amount is slightly less because we've already dispersed funding for the acquisition of this site in Gladstone that will be developed or rehabilitated into 45 units of SRO housing, the only SRO housing in the county. They also have a goal of 20% COVID or MWESB participation, and their commission approved the IGA on November 14th. Our oversight committee reviewed Beaverton's strategy on July 24th and Clackamas County's strategy on August 7th and has recommended both of them to the council for approval, along with a set of considerations for ongoing monitoring and implementation that are included in your packet. I just pulled up one of those that was identified by the committee as the top priority consideration they wanted elevated to the council. And this is a consideration that has been applied to all of the LASs they've reviewed, which is that the jurisdiction should work to further define strategies and outcomes that will be measured to demonstrate the advancement of racial equity. So these are, and those considerations are things the Oversight Committee will be reviewing and in as jurisdictions submit annual reports and elevating to the Council their findings and recommendations on an annual basis. So the intergovernmental agreements that we've developed are reflect months of ongoing collaboration with our partners. I want to thank our whole housing team and particularly Ashley McCarran for leadership in moving this process forward, and also our partners who have helped to make this document and our partnership stronger through months of conversation. So. The IGA, as I said, describes the terms and conditions under which both project and administrative funding will be dispersed from Metro to partners, and it includes some key elements that I wanted to highlight for you, which is that project funding will be released on a project-by-project basis following confirmation by Metro staff that the projects are consistent with what was described in the jurisdiction's local implementation strategy. So that's our governing document for how we will be evaluating projects. All projects are required to record a restrictive covenant that ensures the long-term affordability of the property, consistent with the commitment made to voters in the bond. All jurisdictions will submit annual progress reports on their local implementation strategies, and those will include measurable outcomes on how they are advancing racial equity through this work. The administrative funding will be dispersed on an annual basis and throughout implementation according to the schedule described in Exhibit B of the IGA, and jurisdictions will submit annual financial reporting on expenditures that to ensure that we have documentation of compliance with a GO bond requirement that all funds be used for capital investments related to affordable housing. So that concludes everything that I wanted to highlight for you in my staff report, and I want to thank again all of the efforts of our partners to bring these local implementation strategies forward and to work with us through this IGA process. And with that, I want to invite two of them up to join me. Cadence Petros, who is the Development Division Manager for the City of Beaverton, and Jill Smith, who is the Director of Housing for Clackamas County.
Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to start. So I really appreciate this invitation. It was initially extended to Chair Bernard, and he is at the Association of County Meetings, so had to decline, but asked me to be here in his stead. And thank you for the introduction. I'm Jill Smith. I'm the Director of Housing and Housing Services at Clackamas County, and that includes oversight of the Housing Authority. It's great to be here, and we are so happy about this day. It's been a lot of work, but well worth it. On behalf of Chair Bernard and the Board of County Commissioners, who also serves as the Housing Authority Board with one of our residents, we wish to express heartfelt thanks for your willingness to go down this path to have Metro, you know, dip their toe into the housing world. We especially want to thank the Metro staff who have been true partners, collaborative, flexible. We would not be here without them. Special thanks to Emily and Jess Larson, who are both here. I just have a few little points I wanted to share with you. They're very heartfelt. As you know, we're responding to a housing crisis that is growing, and the Metro Housing Bond is providing opportunity. And it's providing opportunity in ways that you might not even realize. Opportunity to work together across the Portland Metro region as housers, to share best practices. It's promoted strong relationships between all of us that weren't there before. Opportunity to talk to and hear from the people we serve and better understand their desires and needs. Clackamas County has never gone to such lengths to talk to people of color and people that are in poverty and really understand what they need and want. Opportunity to build a regional system focused on systemic solutions rather than invisible jurisdictional boundaries. Opportunity to educate the community and our jurisdictional partners, all of our cities, about housing, the need for affordable housing. In fact, at one jurisdictional meeting, there was a goal expressed that every city in Clackamas County should have affordable housing. Opportunity to lead with racial equity, with great hopes that Clackamas County is a welcoming place where people of color choose to live. And most importantly, opportunity to provide affordable housing to our lowest income residents within neighborhoods that will allow them to thrive. And I want you to know that we have ANOFA ready to go. As soon as we've got the funding, we hope it's out the door by the end of the year, and we want to build affordable housing. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, Council President, Councilors. My name is Cadence Petros. I'm the Development Division Manager at the City of Beaverton. Mayor Doyle sends his regards, and as you all know, our council and mayor have been strong supporters of this effort from the beginning. And I am especially grateful that I get to be here today because for months and months, maybe almost 2 years, we have been working as a group, a team, to try and figure out how, as a region, we can bring the best of our expertise to the table to do what we know is absolutely critical if we want to have a region that's livable for everyone. And today is a huge milestone moment for that, where jurisdictions on opposite sides of the river with different demographics but the same problem are here as the first jurisdictions to have completed the negotiations for our IGAs. And we are so excited because not only earlier this month did the Beaverton City Council approve this IGA, but there was a whole host of housing-related items on the docket that day. and those include our Phase 1 project, the Marianne. It's a disposition and development agreement that the city will donate its property to help an assemblage for REACH to do its first project in Beaverton. We've been courting them for years, and with the resources made available by this bond, we're actually able to realize that dream. They also approved the Memorandum of Understanding with Metro regarding the Elmonica site. And that's another big one for us because it makes additional housing available, hopefully, on light rail, this huge investment that the region made many years ago, but in Washington County has not necessarily resulted in all of the dense development that we're hoping that it can bring to the table. And the fact that we're going to have affordable housing proximate to this amenity is a big deal for us. And then, like Jill, we are looking forward to issuing a NOFA shortly in the next several weeks for our third project. And with that, we hope that all four projects will be out the door and ready to go within the next 18 months. And then we'll need to figure out what we're going to do next. And so I guess my final comment today is this is a great, huge first step, and that I hope we all remember that it is that. It's a first step, and that we're going to need to continue to think about bringing resources to bear to make sure that affordable housing is available to everyone as we move forward in the future. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions for either Emily or our guests? Councillor Lewis and then Councillor Stacey.
I'm going to use my new Metro skills of a non-question question.
Okay.
So I guess first, really big thanks to all who have been working on these plans, in particular here at Metro, Emily and Jess. But Jill, I know for the better part of the past 10 months, you and I have been in rooms and meetings together, and we've been pushing the boundaries of how our two organizations work together, and I'm really impressed by the outreach work that was done at Clackamas, and hope that it's a model for community engagement across the county going forward. But our opportunities in Clackamas are many, and your work to help really build community vision in every single one of our jurisdictions is amazing and laudable. And the tour that we were on with the chair, just really being able to talk to folks in affordable housing in Clackamas County and seeing the difference that it makes and the redevelopment opportunity is absolutely the right strategy for day one. So thank you so much for your work.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Councillor Stacey and then Councillor Craddock and then Councillor Chase.
Unless Councillor Gonzalez wants to precede me because one of his... Thank you. Thank you. I was simply moved by Jill's comment about ignoring invisible governmental boundaries. When we work together as one regional community, we can do great things. 1 year ago, take a couple of weeks, the people of this region overwhelmingly supported a regional housing funding measure. Instead of confusion and doubt and uncertainty about how to proceed after the election, our partners got busy. We got busy establishing an oversight committee, negotiations, discussions, coming forward with those early, what's the tagline?
Phase one project?
Yes, phase one projects. That's easy to remember for some. Showed that momentum was possible, and here we are today. These IGAs come just in time to keep on working on the projects. And these are just two of many that we'll be doing with our partners. By having the policy framework be our responsibility and then getting out of the way of the communities and organizations that know how to deliver, I think we've achieved remarkable success, which will continue until we've spent the last dollar and can confidently go back to the voters, as I'm sure, as you suggested, will be needed to talk again about this need and how to accommodate it. Thanks so much for your work.
Thank you. Councillor Craddock, we're just going to go down the line.
Well, I also want to say thank you for your partnership. It is similar to what Councillor Stacey just mentioned, and here we are 1 year later after we received the voters' support. Here we are you before us and us having the opportunity to say yes to move forward to allow your two jurisdictions to begin to build the housing. And so what an accomplishment this is. We all should be patting ourselves on the back. I've learned a lot in this, in working with how in learning about housing, the value it brings and how important it is for our region. It hasn't been a focus that I've had, and thanks to Councillor Chase, who has taught me well. But, you know, to think about, I think about the children that are in East Multnomah County that when they leave school at night, how many don't know where they're going to sleep that night or where they will be that evening because they don't have permanent housing. And the role that housing has on families in having a stable place to call home and allow children to go home after school, allow children to get rest, allow children to do their homework, allow them to think about other things than where am I going to sleep tonight and where am I going to eat. So this has so much to do with families, with helping families be healthy and stable and helping them begin to think about the next step in their life, of the other challenges that they might be facing and how they're going to achieve that. And so housing isn't, you know, I used to think, you know, a job is the first thing you need if you're challenged financially. No, it's housing has to be the first step. And that's the first step to being, helping your, you know, one step further to being successful and having a stable life. So thank you for your partnership and helping us with this. And we're just so fortunate that the voters supported this and be able to say yes today with these two IGAs. So thank you.
You're the first two, so.
Yeah, pretty great.
We're excited as you are.
Go ahead. We're extra excited. Yeah. I would, it's interesting, too, because you're singing our tune, because I also wrote down the systems rather than boundaries language and underlined that, you know, because that is really, I think, the spirit of how we're trying to approach this work. And it is to say, you know, Metro has a role, the local jurisdictions have a role, And let's build on the strengths. Metro's is not to be the implementers of the work that you've been already preparing to do for many, many, many years. And you know, I see this coming together very well. And the commitment that your jurisdictions and the others have had in from the very beginning, saying let's get to work and figure out how to put a package together that will work. And then it passed and continuing. You know, that was not the end. We thought maybe that was the end of the work. No, that was, we just finally got to the starting line. So it's yet again, we're almost really just at the start. I mean, it's this incredible journey that we're moving forward on that you're really champions for. So I really appreciate it and thank you. I do have a question, too, really, which is around the recommendations from the Oversight Committee. What I just a little more on your thoughts about those recommendations, you know, and it can be something we can always continue to work through, but really, is there anything we can be doing that's helpful for your work in this or other areas as we move forward? I think as a council, if there is a role that we can take to help and advance this work and make it easier, you know, any reflections on that would be fantastic.
So I think the recommendation around how do we really operationalize racial equity in bond implementation, that's a big, meaty question, and I think we have lots of thoughts on the answers for that, and it focuses, of course, on COBID companies, but that's only a part of it. Screening criteria, how do we make sure that folks are able to get into the apartment homes and that you have a sustainable community as well. There's a balancing act that needs to be done, but there are ways that we can examine those criteria, each and every one, and that's work that we're beginning to do. And other pieces are in the marketing. How do people find out about these, the availability of the apartment homes? And so I think from a regional collaboration perspective, Jill mentioned earlier that one of the maybe obvious benefits is when you work as a collaborative effort across the region, you get to have the benefits of the best practices that each jurisdiction brings to the table. And I think having Metro be that convener around specific topic areas is very helpful because you all have bandwidth and breadth of knowledge and can bring research capacity to talk about what others are doing around the nation, and we can bring information about how we are doing things and how we want to move forward. And when you put all of that together, you might get a couple good ideas.
Yeah, I concur exactly with what she said, and I want to appreciate the way that we have been able to, what you all referred to in the beginning, let everybody kind of have their own area of expertise and move forward with that rather than create barriers for one another. Housing authorities are actually very proficient at serving people of color and doing great outreach to help them. You'll be surprised to hear that about 35% of the people that we serve at the Housing Authority of Clackamas County are people of color. They're Black. That's not even counting Hispanic residents. So using that expertise that housing authorities have and overlaying that with this new beautiful housing that these folks deserve to live in is something that I'm excited. It's a challenge for us. And I just want everybody to kind of stay in their lanes and let us learn from each other and not slow down moving forward, because this is an emergency. It's urgent that we act.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I make a comment about how happy I am that the suburbs are the first to get it done?
Just saying.
Independent
cities outside
the city of Portland.
Clackamas is a county, not a city.
It's amazing. I'm jotting down some notes. When we approve the IGAs, we'll have released or finalized the process for $140 million for affordable housing for over 1,000 units. So it's just the weight of the moment. Jill, I really want to, commend and recognize the Clackamas County for the work to set those goals around COVID and around workforce participation. I wrote down a quote about the county taking steps unlike ever before to engage communities of color and low-income communities. I mean, I think I can't take credit for all of the work that this agency and this council and former councils have done to get Metro to a stage where we could refer, pass a housing bond, and now implement it. But I really think that the spirit of advancing racial equity is around just that, helping our partners look at things through that lens and to develop those frameworks. So thank you. I really appreciate that was a part of your presentation. And Cadence, I'm so grateful to, one, be able to represent part of the city of Beaverton alongside Councillor Drickson. Really excited for projects like Elmonica and the TOD team and all of the good work that we can continue doing through that. And, of course, I mean, Beaverton just continues to be, a leader in the region. So I appreciate your work and appreciate it. I wish I could name everyone in the planning department that's worked on this. I don't want to try because I don't want to leave any names out. But thank you all so much.
Both Clackamas County and the city of Beaverton have laudable histories in support for and efforts to ensure that affordable housing is available in your jurisdictions. But you've long been hamstrung by lack of funding in order to achieve those goals. Mm-hmm. So it's with a great deal of pleasure, with the efforts region-wide to produce the affordable housing bond, and then with the execution of these intergovernmental agreements to allow you to move forward and do the things that you've already been doing, but to be able to do so with much greater success and alacrity even. So very pleased today, looking forward to meeting with our other cohorts around the region as well to move forward. But congratulations, as has been pointed out, as being the first.
I'll just put an exclamation point on everything that everybody said. I'm glad to have you here and be the first. Glad to have a whole bunch of projects rolling out and the hard work to make it so that there's basically no time wasted in between each one of these things that you're
each one of these things in a process, right, and not working linearly and waiting for everything to get just perfect. So thank you. It's amazing what we can do when we get out of the linear and get more stuff done faster. So thank you. I'm going to actually just then call for a motion.
Can we do a single motion on both?
We can't.
No, we're going to do the first one on the first resolution, number 19-5009.
Can I move to approve the first resolution?
Second.
So I move by Councilor Gonzalez and seconded by Councilor Dirksen. And we
on
will
Beaverton's make... intergovernmental
agreement. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yes, please.
Yeah. Yes.
Well done.
Shall I read the whole thing? For the purpose of authorizing execution of the Second Amendment with the City of Beaverton for implementation of the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Measure, clerk will call the roll.
Councilor Lewis?
Aye.
Councilor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councilor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Councilor Stacey?
Aye.
Councilor Craddock?
Aye.
Councilor Chase?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It passes. Yay! All right. Moving on to resolution number 19-5010 for the purpose of authorizing execution of an intergovernmental agreement with the Housing Authority of Clackamas County for implementation of the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Measure. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Councilor Lewis. Second.
I'll second.
Second by Councilor Craddock. Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Councilor Craddock?
Aye.
Councilor Chase?
Aye.
Councilor Lewis?
Aye.
Councilor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councilor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Councilor Stacey?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you. Thank you to both
thank
of you.
You.
And thank you. Met the, yes. Ashley, don't go anywhere. I don't know what you call a Metroid. I guess a Metroid. You're Metroid of the day. For all of the work in the background, thank you for helping put all this together and making sure that we are on the right track legally. So thank you.
Here, here.
That's a new word. Metroid of the day.
Metroid of the day. I think that's what we are, right? Metroids?
Metroids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll move on to public communication. We had put things ahead of public communication today because we had guests coming in and wanted them to be able to get back to work as quickly as possible. If anyone wishes to testify in an item not scheduled for a public hearing, now is the time to do so. For all testimony, please fill out one of the blue testimony cards and provide that to the clerk. And I've got three folks that have signed up. Four folks that have signed up, and you'll have 3 minutes on the clock. I'm going to call all four of you up, and you can line up in order across on the desks in front of us. And the first one is John Warren. Second is Terrell Garrett. Third is Les Poole, and then Art Llewellyn. Mr. Warren.
For the record, my name is John Warren, Council President and members of the Council. Good afternoon. I'm here on behalf of the Portland Swap Meet after learning about the development opportunity study overview that's incorporating the Portland Expo Center. I feel that when people are honored to be in a position to make decisions of consequence on behalf of the community, it's important for them to have as much information as possible to assist in their decision-making. Portland Swap Meet will hold its 56th annual Auto Swap Meet in April of 2020. Since 1970, the Expo has been the home for the Portland Swap Meet. The event is presented by six antique area car clubs and is comprised of over 140 volunteers. This nationally recognized event draws thousands of shoppers throughout the Expo each April, averaging 1,500 vendors and 25,000 attendees each year. Not only is the Portland Swap Meet consistently one of the top revenue-generating events for the Expo Center, it is the only user of the Expo that occupies the entire facility, both inside and out, as indicated on the map that I've left put in the record. We cover everything, which creates one of the largest automotive-related swap meets in the country, recently ranked by Hagerty Insurance as the number two swap meet to attend. The economic impact of our event is significant. Millions of dollars are generated for the local businesses, including but not limited to food industries, lodging, transportation, sanitation, security, and auto-related industries and markets. In addition, the Portland Swap Meet has endowed scholarships at four area colleges. The scholarships have assisted dozens of students that otherwise could not afford tuition to be involved to enroll in school to get an auto tech degree. No other facility in Portland or in Vancouver area could accommodate this event. The addition of the Yellow Max line, which we appreciate very much to alleviate parking issues and to facilitate convenient access for both our vendors and attendees, further sets this facility apart from any other. We agree in raising awareness of the public around the history of the original Expo building during the World War II era and the city of Vanport is very important, and we believe this can best be accomplished by memorializing and encompassing that history within capital improvements to increase community events and involvement at the Expo. Not the physical reduction, elimination, or decreased use of this wonderful facility. But thank you for your time.
Thanks for coming in. Yep. Mr. Garrett?
Despite Metro's provision of comprehensive documents intended to clarify cost and pricing in the wet waste marketplace, due to the muddling of dry and wet waste terminology and products, an unclear picture continues. Beginning a few years ago, in order to provide rate clarity, Metro documents have discussed the need for discrete service cost analysis. I agree. Don't compare a multi-commodity blended rate to a single commodity rate. Keep discrete cost and services discrete and then compare. Next Tuesday's work session is based on a comparison of Metro's blended wet-dry rate to the wet-only rate at Forest Grove. Rather, using the suggested methodology of discreteness, Forest Grove actually charges $111.43 per ton compared to Metro's $92.38. The true differential is not the $14 everyone has assumed, but rather $19.05 per ton. With Forest Grove charging a 20.6% premium to Metro, the problem is actually 36% larger than what most believe. On a brighter note, let's look at dry waste. City of Roses charges $103.81, Greenway $103.93, and I believe with one exception, the rest of the private facilities are within reason compared to Metro's real cost of $110.58. With TVWR located at the landfill face and charging $119.67, it is apparent they did not get the memo. Staff next Tuesday will ask Council to direct them to conduct a full wet waste cost review at the privately owned transfer stations. Wet waste is a commodity with little possibility of innovation or risk-based investment. It's kind of like pushing power down a transmission line. I'm not a fan of price regulation and hope that Metro can find a better solution than exercising its statutory authority to regulate wet waste rates. However, such a solution would be better than having to remove certain participants from the marketplace. Dry waste, however, is a completely different species. It is dynamic, full of technological change and possibility for innovation. With our open market pricing, there are financial incentives for taking on risk associated with new investment. Controlling pricing and rates of return would remove these incentives, stopping innovation, and significantly reducing recycling rates. That is why, correctly, staff is purposely not asking for a dry waste rate review. Staff wants to fix a wet waste problem and leave dry waste in its current configuration so people such as myself, contingent upon a little thing called a Metro I&I grant, are willing to roll the dice on a $4 million advanced material recovery system. Staff's request makes sense, and I ask your support for their request and hope that we can come up with a smart solution to the problem.
Thank you, and nicely done. Mr.
We'll
Poole.
See if I can get done in 2 minutes and 59 seconds.
I know. That was amazing, right? I know.
Les Poole. I live in Clackamas County, and I do want to thank Jill Smith for all of her hard work on the housing bond. One thing that we're really concerned about region-wide, and I come to you as a citizen, not as an official, but let's just say I talk to a lot of folks. There's a lot of concern about what we're getting for our money, and nowhere in the approval did I hear much about accountability and what the outcomes will be given the amount of money that's involved. I know that exists, so I'm not here to lecture you, but I want to remind everyone that we're making an incredible investment here. And tied to it is transportation, and that's my subject today. It's polled right up there at the top in Clackamas County for years. As we all know, I-205 was ignored. I shouldn't say ignored. It was dropped. The last thing dropped from HB 2017, the $5.3 billion transportation bill. And we were told that tolling might be a way to help fund that, and that led to a plan to toll folks for using existing lanes and do some higher-priced charges for using existing highways. That's not going over very well. I come to you as someone from Clackamas County who understands that we absolutely need to move products. We absolutely have a distribution-based economy. And with that in line, while I don't expect Metro to do anything about I-205 or tolling, there's a way you really can help, and that's to approve the Sunrise Corridor Phase 2. And I've testified at two of the meetings. I was here last night, and there's a lot of confusion about what's going on, so I would ask those that are especially those that live and represent the area. I know Councillor Craddock is dealing with Damascus and understands what's going on out there and lives in Southeast. And so I come to you with a hope that that project will be fully funded. Please reassure everyone we're not building the Mount Hood Freeway. And I invite all of you and anyone with concerns to drive out on Highway 212 eastbound towards Damascus. And when you get to the split with Highway 224, 212 becomes a single-lane road. And it's not so much that it becomes a single-lane road. It becomes a dangerous, winding, single-lane road through a canyon. And frankly, the habitat there is never going to be what it could be with changes. And the biggest change that can be made is to bypass that bottleneck and get the segment done from 122nd out to 172nd. With all the growth in Clackamas and in Happy Valley, it is essential. So let's look forward to getting that project funded and hopefully eliminating some of the confusion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. Mr. Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Council. I have just some material to submit into the record. I have three of these, so you can share how... from a previous submission, I've updated it and came across a means to affect how a streetcar is planned, and one that I'm concerned about, and I'm as a streetcar fan and a light rail advocate here in Portland, I look at all the options, and I think you'll find this one interesting. And it's a part of my thinking, the way I present material to you in terms of design, and I sure wish you would grant my request for a review of my packet of information that includes this work here, a subway for the MAX system that I believe is the most earthquake resilient, same types of drawings that I'm showing in this paper here, types of route considerations that are... To me, considerable, and I can't submit them and not have an answer that is anything more than dismissive. It's just not right for dedicated advocates of any kind. And so there's the kind of a little breakthrough I'm hoping for the city of Seattle to get a streetcar on First Avenue. I think it should be considered. I think it's safer. I want to get into that. I have one other subject I want to address as well, new material, the one titled A Perspective That Applies to Emergency Access, Emergency Vehicle Access, which I think applies to the Columbia River Crossing. So I want you to put those into the record, that one. Kind of compiles the way I see things going. I do want to wish the council well, and I'm glad that the recent measure passed, glad that the I-5 bridge is being reconsidered, and I'm a supporter of the Rose Corridor I-5 rebuild. Maybe not the full one, but perhaps a scaled-down one, I believe it will improve traffic and reduce pollution and dangers and hazards of pedestrians through the area, that I-5 corridor connected to I-5. Very happy about both those projects getting a fair hearing. It should be part of our campaigns politically. So I'm practicing my yin and my yang today. So you enjoy the rest of your day and coming days.
Thank you, Mr. Long. All right. I don't have anybody else signed up for testimony on non-agenda items. Again, if you wish to come forward, now would be the time. Seeing no one, I will close that portion of our hearing today and move on to the consent agenda. We have today's consent agenda of 8 items that I will quickly read through. Resolution number 19-5040 for the purpose of confirming new appointments to the Metro Committee on Racial Equity. Resolution number 19-5030 for the purpose of authorizing the Chief Operating Officer to issue a renewed non-system license authorizing America Honda to transport and dispose non-recoverable solid waste, including, oh, good Lord, putrescible waste at the Covanta Waste-to-Energy facility located in Brooks, Oregon. Resolution number 19-5031 for the purpose of authorizing the Chief Operating Officer to issue a renewed non-system license authorizing Pacific Foods of Oregon, Inc. to transport and dispose of non-recoverable solid waste, including putrescible waste at the Covanta Waste-to-Energy facility located in Brooks, Oregon. Resolution number 19-5032 for the purpose of authorizing the Chief Operating Officer to issue a renewed non-system license authorizing Swan Island Dairy to transport and dispose of non-recoverable solid waste, including putrescible waste at the Covanta Waste-to-Energy facility located in Brooks, Oregon. Resolution number 19-5033 for the purpose of authorizing the Chief Operating Officer to issue a renewed non-system license authorizing the Boeing Company to transport and dispose of non-recoverable solid waste, including putrescible waste at the Covanta Waste-to-Energy facility located in Brooks, Oregon. It just felt like it was all falling apart. Resolution number 19-5041 for the purpose of authorizing the Chief Operating Officer to issue a renewed non-system license authorizing Martin Brower to transport and dispose of non-recoverable solid waste, including putrescible waste, at the Covanta Waste-to-Energy facility located in Brooks, Oregon. Resolution 19-5042 for the purpose of authorizing the Chief Operating Officer to issue a renewed non-system licensing authorizing Owens Corning Gresham Foundation plant and dispose of non-recoverable solid waste, including putrescible waste, at the Covanta Waste-to-Energy facility located in Brooks, Oregon, and consideration of the Council budget session minutes for November 14th, 2019. I was waiting for that one. Do I have a motion for all 8 on the consent agenda? I have a second. So moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Gonzalez. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
Madam President.
It passes. Yes?
I just want to observe that you could have a career as the House reading clerk.
If I hadn't had that one word thrown in there, I could have done it faster. But next time, I think I will authorize the Chief Operating Officer to read all of that. That was my thought through the entire thing. Why isn't that in there? All right. It passes, and we will move on to back to resolutions. We will move on to resolution number 19-5017, which is for the purpose of amending the fiscal year 2019-20 budget and appropriation scheduled and the fiscal 2019 through 20 through 2023-24 capital improvement plan to provide for changes in operations. And we have Lisa Houghton to make some remarks. Do we going to kick that off, Mr. Scott, at all, or introduce it? Okay.
Over to Lisa to walk through the budget. The budget amendments, and we'll sort of briefly do a quick overview and then take any questions from council.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just for the record, would you like to say patriciable?
No, I don't want to try. I was very glad you were the one that was doing that. Well, good afternoon, Council President and Councilors. I'm Lisa Houghton. I'm Metro's Financial Planning Officer, manager. And I'm here today to talk about an action, the first one of 3 consolidated amendments that will be presented to you for the current fiscal year. The staff report and other documents that were made available to you earlier this month provide detailed descriptions of the various requests and their financial impacts. I'll provide a high-level summary of the amendments today and also be available for any questions you may have. I'll begin with the amendments that include requests for additional FTE. Council and Financial Regulatory Services are requesting a 1.0 limited duration FTE and $125,000 to implement fiscal year 19-20 budget note 4 proposed by Councillor Gonzalez and designed to decrease barriers facing COBIT firms and enhance our agency's equity in contracting. The $125,000 will be used for technological consulting and training contracted professional services. The 1.0 FTE senior management analyst will assist with implementing recommendations derived from a recently completed NAMAC Oregon pilot project. The position will end as of August 2020, unless a request to change its status to regular is approved by the council. Current year costs for the position of $79,000 will be shared equally by the solid waste and parks and natural local option levies funds. If council approves the position change to regular status, annualized costs are estimated at $118,000. Our agency's regional investment strategy and the related transportation funding measure involves staff from GAPD, DEI, and the Core Regional Investment Strategy Group. They submitted a single amendment requesting the following: $485,000 for contracted professional services to help provide with communications and outreach to our region's residents, funding for community partnerships with four nonprofit culturally specific organizations, including Getting There, a key coalition partner for the project. The amendment also requests $144,000 to fund temporary personal service costs through the end of the current fiscal year and a change in status for an existing limited duration 1.0 FTE program analyst to regular status. That position is currently funded through December of 2020, so there are no additional costs in the current fiscal year. Annualized costs after that are estimated at $136,000. Property and Environmental Services is requesting an additional 22.7 FTE to support a broad spectrum of operational functions. The increased FTE will be used as follows: 13 FTE for traffic control technicians and a service supervisor 2 to support traffic control at the south and central transfer stations. The new positions will replace external staff currently provided through our transfer station operating contract. The department determined that bringing the staffing in-house at the end of the current operating contract, which ends January of 2020, will be cost-effective and result in better customer service. An additional 7.25 FTE for hazardous waste technicians will be used to increase current part-time positions at both transfer stations to full-time, again to provide better services. The remaining 2.45 FTE will be providing the following: a 1.0 FTE finance manager, which will provide both Parks and Nature and Property and Environmental Services their own finance manager. The two departments currently share one finance manager. Staffing and program increases in each of the departments have increased dramatically over the last several years, resulting in the need for an additional finance manager. 1.0 FTE for a program coordinator to allow the addition of a new RID patrol group in order to provide greater operational capacity, and a 0.45 FTE to increase an existing part-time program assistant to a full-time. Again, the increased FTE will allow the RID program to provide greater operational capacity. The current year costs for all the additional FTE are $916,000, and annualized costs are estimated at $1.72 million. Information Services is requesting a 1.0 FTE manager, one, to oversee security training, policies, and practices. Almost 80% of last year's cybersecurity occurred in the public sector, and this position will allow Metro to address critical security issues proactively. Current year costs for the position are $89,000. Annualized costs are estimated at $153,000. The Portland 5 Center for the Arts is requesting a 1.0 FTE assistant director of production to provide oversight for three production supervisors in order to improve event functions, stage maintenance, and staff training. Current costs for the position are $88,000, and annualized costs are estimated at $117,000. The Oregon Zoo is requesting a 0.50 FTE nutrition technician 1 to make a position full-time. The position has primary responsibility for animal diet preparation and delivery. Current costs for the position are $34,000. Annualized costs are estimated at $45,000. Parks and Nature is requesting 1.2 FTE to bring three part-time positions to full-time. The positions include an associate public affairs specialist, administrative specialist two, and a senior natural resource scientist. All three positions increase and will allow more capacity to meet growing program functions. Current year costs for the increases are $63,000. Annualized costs are estimated at $118,000. The amendment also includes a request for $100,000 for community partnership innovation funds and $50,000 for decommissioning of a Blue Lake wetland trail. The $50,000 for the wetland trail was in the fiscal year 18-19 budget, was unspent but not carried forward due to timing issues with the contractor. The Deputy Chief Operating Officer is requesting 1.25 FTE to bring four part-time metro regional operation positions to full-time. The positions being increased provide custodial, security, and management analyst support services. Current costs for the increases are $54,000, and annualized costs are estimated at $95,000. Human Resources is requesting 0.20 FTE for Program Specialist 2 to bring a part-time position to full-time. The additional FTE will allow the department to provide better workers' compensation and leave services. Current year costs for the increases are $13,000, and annualized costs are estimated at $20,000. The amendment also includes a request for $50,000 of ongoing appropriations for temporary labor costs. The department has ongoing but intermittent needs for staff to complete electronic filing and record retention work, and the intermittent nature of the work is best suited for temporary staff rather than positioned staff. The amendment also requests $85,000 for the pay equity study currently underway. The amount includes $60,000 that was included in last year's budget, was unspent but not carried forward due to timing issues with a consulting firm, an additional $25,000 due to increased services provided by the consulting firm. The Research Center is requesting authority to recognize $464,000 in additional revenues, $69,000 in interfund transfer revenues from other departments in the agency, and $533,000 in additional appropriations authority. The request is due to the department offering to provide administrative functions for an interagency group called the Regional Aerial Photo Consortium. When a current administrator, a state agency, informed the consortium they would not be able to fill the role. The acceptance of these administrative responsibilities will result in other consortium members sending their contributions to our agency, which will in turn be paid out for services provided to the consortium. The Council Office is requesting $62,000 to retain the services of an executive-level search firm for the Chief Operating Officer recruitment. The Deputy Chief Operating Officer is requesting $16,500 of ongoing appropriations for staff development travel and office and computer equipment costs. The amendment also requests $15,000 for one-time consulting services to assist with the development of operational measures of strategies, programs, and services. There are five additional actions, each amending the five-year capital improvement plan. The actions reflect changes in projects at various locations, including Parks and Nature, OCC, Portland Five Center for the Arts, Property and Environmental Services, and the Oregon Zoo. The PES and Oregon Zoo project changes do not impact appropriations. The Parks and Nature, the OCC, and P5 project changes result in a $500 decrease, a $236,000 increase, and a $498,000 increase in the fund's respective contingencies. That ends my presentation. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for staff? Go.
Just quickly summarize, and thank you, Lisa, for running through the details. I think it's important for council to know what you're voting on.
Yes.
The high-level summary of what's before you in this budget amendment. We are going to spend about $1.1 million in general fund contingency. About $628,000 of that is for the transportation measure and continuing development, staff and outreach, et cetera. So I think all of the things, in my view, that are in that $1.1 million general fund contingency are important. They're things that are important to the agency that we need to move forward with. I do want you to know that that is more confirmed contingency in the fall than is normal. And so as we go through the rest of the year, we will just need to, and I will need to, be prudent in terms of when we look to that contingency, because we are pulling quite a bit out now in order to move forward with some of these priorities. And then I did want to note note of the FTE increases, there are about 23 FTE being added to Property and Environmental Services. And while that is a large number, 13 of those are traffic control staff that we're actually bringing in-house. So they're staff that were already there, but they were contracted out for a number of operational reasons, and I think wise operational reasons, we're going to bring those in-house and make them Metro employees, which will actually give us a little bit more the ability to emphasize diversity around some of those employees and some of our hiring. And then 7.25 of those FTE in PES are increasing HazTech services throughout, you know, our facilities. So just wanted to sort of draw to those really big picture in addition to a lot of the details that are in here.
Great. Thank you. Councilor Stacey?
Thank you, Madam President. First, I want to thank Lisa for walking us through that, but also preparing the document and writing. most of the changes you ran through were familiar to me, probably either because of my solid waste liaison responsibilities and understanding what the acting chief operating officer just said about taking on the flagging and traffic direction responsibilities at our transfer stations in order to provide better customer service. No slam on the contract operators, but these are people skills that may not be entirely compatible with the skills needed for other operations that the contractor is responsible for, and they give us a great opportunity to have a new entry gateway where our diversity, equity, and inclusion policies around hiring and retention can be exercised. And likewise, it all made sense when I read it, and I'm very grateful to the Chief Operating Officer for summarizing it so eloquently. A little bit more than usual, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Or questions for staff? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Councilor Stacey and seconded by Councilor Gonzalez. Is there any further discussion? All right. Clerk will call the roll.
Councilor Chase?
Aye.
Councilor Lewis?
Aye.
Councilor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councilor Gonzalez?
Yes.
Councilor Stacey?
Aye.
Councilor Craddock?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to Resolution 5.2, which is Resolution Number 195021, for the purpose of adopting the list of solid waste designated facilities of the solid waste system and to remove Riverbend landfill pursuant to Metro Code Chapter 5.05. We have Roy Rauer, the Director of Property and Environmental Services, and Hyla Ritter, Metro staff, to help kick this off. And the final decision as part of a very long process.
Good afternoon, Council President Peterson. I'm Roy Brower, your interim Director of Property and Environmental Services. And today we're coming to you with good news. You don't have to read all those non-system license titles again for certain facilities.
Actually, the only person saying is...
Right.
Yeah.
I got your back, Andrew.
It wasn't going to happen for you again.
It's anyway. Not going to happen again.
Today I'm here with Hyla Ritter of my department to provide an overview of the resolution you will be considering today. We have just a few remarks and are happy to answer any questions afterwards. The resolution before you today adopts an updated list of designated facilities of Metro's solid waste system. Facilities that appear on this list are located both inside and outside the Metro jurisdictional boundary. And by getting on the list and becoming engaged in an agreement with Metro can freely be used by waste generators, haulers, and transporters from the Metro region once they're on the list. This resolution also removes Riverbend Landfill from the designated facility list effective January 1, 2020, as a result of a code amendment adopted by Council in 2017. As you are aware, after all of our region's hard work to reduce, reuse, recycle, and compost, the Metro region still sends about 1.5 million tons of garbage to landfills each year. Our region relies on many landfills in eastern Oregon and Washington, as well as in Willamette Valley and one up in Cowlitz County, in meeting our final needs for final disposal. Designating specific facilities to receive metro area's waste provides us with assurance that the waste is ultimately being managed in an environmentally responsible way. It also serves the vision of the regional waste plan adopted earlier this year and the council's six desired outcomes. It helps provide for efficient delivery of waste to landfills with strong environmental safeguards, fosters an economic well-being by establishing relationships with landfills that are significant employers and job creators in their local communities, ensures operational resilience and adaptability of our garbage and recycling system by enabling waste to be delivered to a variety of different facilities beginning in 2020, of various shapes and sizes and located in different parts of the Northwest. The regulatory action before you today is in keeping with these and other responsibilities described in the Regional Waste Plan and Metro Code. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Hyla Ritter, our interim compliance manager in Metro's Property and Environmental Services Department, and Hyla will share a brief overview of the proposed legislation.
Thank you, Roy. Council President Peterson and Metro Councilors, if adopted, this resolution will accomplish three important things. First, it will formally adopt the list of facilities designated to receive garbage and other waste created within Metro's jurisdiction as required in Metro Code. And as you are aware, Metro has limited land and resources for the disposal of garbage within our jurisdictional boundary, so Metro must rely on facilities, some of which are located outside the region, to dispose of this waste. Designation of a solid waste disposal site requires Council's approval. When Council designates a facility located outside the region, the Chief Operating Officer is authorized to execute an agreement between Metro and that facility. In addition to Metro inspections, these agreements allow disposal sites to collect and remit regional system fees and excise taxes to Metro. The proposed designated facility list is included as Exhibit A and includes Metro's own transfer stations and all private solid waste facilities located within the Metro region that are subject to regulatory authority. This list also includes the out-of-region designated facilities, seven landfills, and one material recovery facility as shown on that map. Which brings me to the second important action of the resolution before you today. This action will prospectively remove Riverbend Landfill from the designated facility list effective January 1st of 2020. This also aligns with the expiration of the current agreement with Riverbend at the end of this year. Waste Management of Oregon is the owner and operator of Riverbend Landfill, located in Yamhill County near McMinnville. That landfill first began accepting some of the region's waste as a Metro-designated facility in 2008, and there has been concern expressed by the local Yamhill County residents over the impact of Riverbend's operations on surrounding neighbors and farming communities. Riverbend Landfill also faces ongoing legal challenges regarding the expansion of that landfill's capacity. Metro Council has decided that the region should not contribute to the creation of or expansion of landfills when there is so much existing capacity at other landfills, particularly in the eastern part of Oregon and Washington. In 2017, Council adopted a landfill capacity policy that determines which landfills are eligible to receive metro area waste. As a result of that legislation, after December 31st of this year, Riverbend Landfill will no longer be eligible to receive metro area waste. Therefore, staff recommends removing Riverbend Landfill from the list of designated facilities. Finally, approval of this resolution will authorize the Chief Operating Officer to execute an updated agreement with any designated facility that may include the acceptance of putrescible or wet waste. This is significant because the current disposal contract required Metro to send at least 90% of the region's putrescible waste to a disposal site owned by Waste Management. This is known as the flow guarantee. As the disposal contract with Waste Management expires at the end of this year, so does the flow guarantee. Beginning in 2020, Metro's new disposal contract with Waste Management covers only the waste received at Metro transfer stations and not all stations. Allowing acceptance of putrescible waste in certain agreements will reduce the need for haulers to individually obtain a non-system license from Metro, and have to read that word over and over again, and increase system efficiency. In addition, these updates will better align existing language among agreements for increased consistency. If this resolution is adopted as proposed, the designated facility list would become effective January 1st of 2020. Staff recommends that the council adopts this resolution to establish the designated facility list and authorize the chief operating officer to negotiate agreements accordingly. We're happy to provide further details or answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions from Councilor Dirksen?
Typically, staff report will indicate whether there is any known opposition to this action. And as I reviewed this packet this week, I noticed that this staff report did not do so. Can you tell me if there is any currently, you know, known opposition to any of this action?
There is no known opposition to the removal of Riverbend.
Or to the package.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
There is no opposition to this package.
Great.
That we are aware of.
Yeah. Councilor Stacey.
Madam President, if there are no more questions, I'd like the opportunity to move approval and then speak to the resolution.
Yes, but.
Yes, ma'am.
I was going to look to our attorney and the proper process, because we do have people here to testify. I would like to take that testimony prior to a motion.
I would be pleased to hear that testimony.
Is that correct? Okay, thank you. So if there's no further questions for staff, I'll move on to a public hearing, correct?
Public comment.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Public comment.
All right, I will open up a public comment time, which is what I'm going to call it for now. I've got two folks that have signed up. If anybody wishes to testify, if you'd fill out a blue card and hand it to the clerk, that would be helpful. Mm-hmm. I will call you both up, and you will both get 3 minutes on the clock. And we have, I'm going to say...
Ilsa.
Thank you, Ilsa Pierce and Ramsey McPhillips.
It's easier than Trestle.
Thank you.
But it's not synonymous with wet.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to come. And, well, we're here to celebrate and thank all of you for the hard work you did in the last few years to take Riverbend off your list. We're both residents of Yamhill County. Ramsey lives a little closer to the landfill than I do. But for 12 years, a group of us worked to close this landfill. We've had several very large court victories, but it's still out there. But without Metro's garbage, Yamhill County has become a far more livable place. We have no major odor issues. Since your garbage stopped coming, the smell has decreased dramatically. The fact that we could not get an environmental consideration of a landfill that is in a severe seismic hazard zone on the banks of a river, and there were no environmental issues that we could win on, we were able to depend upon Oregon land use law, which won the day for us at the Supreme Court, and which has hopefully put almost the last nail in the coffin. But the hard work that all of you did, several of us met with previous council members, but we did meet with Ms. Craddock and Sam Chase, and I know Bob Stacey helped move the ball up the hill, and Mr. Dirksen was also involved. We came out here for years, making our case with pictures of seagulls and all kinds of putrescible waste all over the place.
Thank you.
So
it's going to be the word of the day.
And as soon as you said the word putrescible, my ears perked up because I don't get to hear that word too often.
No, none of us
outside
do.
Of my other world.
It doesn't come up in conversation.
It doesn't. It's not a word you hear too often. But we're very, very grateful because you opened up the opportunity for many other communities to also see that sending their putrescible waste to Riverbend Landfill was not in the best interests of the environment or the county in general. So we're just here to thank you for your hard work, and this is a day we've been waiting for a very long time. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
So bookends are great, right? The state in the mid 80s allocated through the Senate Bill, I think, 622, $1 million to ask DEQ and you to find a new place to put your waste because the St. John's landfill had filled up.
There were many sites that were projected, and you whittled it down to zero. There was no place you could find that did not destroy farmland, impact a wetland, or wasn't seismically challenged. So a company called Waste Management showed up and offered to build you basically a facility up in the gorge. And you, being the biggest NIMBY there is, not in my backyard, moved your garbage up into the gorge. And I was really happy because I live next to a little landfill out in McMinnville that was receiving some of your garbage. And part of your contract with Waste Management was that 90% of your garbage would go up into the gorge, and I assumed that included the garbage that was going out to Yimco County. End of story, the garbage dump would close. Well, you signed that contract for 90%. Waste Management then bought Riverbend Landfill. Instead of the 10% going up into the gorge, it started coming out there. There was a name that kept showing up over and over again through the DEQ, through my fight over the last 30 years, and the name is Bob Stacey. He's been involved with making sure that Metro was not compromised by bad environmental policy having to do with landfills for a career, working for different bureaucrats, different organizations, now with this government agency. And I'm here to thank him profusely for the long haul and for cheerleading this effort to get Metro to finally take your garbage somewhere out of the Oregon farmland where it appropriately belongs, up in the gorge. I really appreciate this. It's been a long, long fight, and I'm very happy this day has arrived. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Ramsey. Very kind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Try and get this done so you can get home to Yamhill County without rush hour. All right. I will call for a motion. Well, I will close the public hearing if there's no further comments and ask for a motion.
Madam President, I move approval of resolution 19-5017.
Second.
Madam President?
Yeah.
Before we vote, I'd like to make a comment.
And it would be after me. I've already reserved time.
can we make sure that's the right resolution?
That's the right number.
Yeah, I wrote it down, but maybe
no,
I'm
it's
wrong.
Actually 19-21. Yes, let me.
5021.
I was just going to ask Councillor Stacey to...
See, Madam President, the trestle is hard to say, but
yeah.
If you're wrong, everybody knows how to say that.
No. Resolution number 19-5021.
21.
Mm-hmm. Do I have a second?
Yes, a second.
It's been moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Chase. Is there any further discussion? Councillor Dirksen.
Thank you, Madam President. Just for the record, I wanted to point out that when the original proposal to remove Riverbend Landfill was brought forward, I was opposed for various reasons. But in the interim, changing circumstances and also the actions of other agencies have rendered much of my opposition moot, and so I will be voting in favor of this.
Awesome. Thank you. Councillor Stacey.
Madam President, given the thoughtful presentation by Hyla and the remarkably generous credit I was given by the witnesses, I want to limit my remarks to simply noting that moving from hearing expressions of concern about a landfill and hearing in my role as one of the liaisons to the solid waste program that we had 100-plus years of capacity in the gorge at the landfill in Arlington County, it's not too hard to put those dots together, that we don't really need to use this resource, solid waste, for purposes of financing the construction or expansion of landfills on the wet side of the state or anywhere else. We have sufficient landfills already in existence with sufficient capacity to last several generations into the future. And I'm confident if there is a burning need 100 years from now for a new site, that we can find one on the drier side of the state as we, with our partners, Waste Management, did this time. I'm very grateful for the prod that concerned citizens, two of whom are here today, from the immediate vicinity of that landfill, brought my attention to their concern. But the connection of what our mission is and the adverse impact we were having on that community was too great to be ignored. Since that time, Waste Management has invested and continues to invest in its facility in Eastern Oregon. We have other assets in our working circle. And I think what we're doing now is simply implementing the policy that was adopted in 2017 by conforming our list of facilities to that policy. I want to thank you, Isla. Thanks, Ilsa. Thanks, Ramsey, for coming all the way out here to say thank you to us.
Sure. If Councillor Stacey, is that done?
Are you done?
Oh, yeah. There's this wonderful McMinnville News Register editorial addressed to waste management, but that's sort of like running a victory lap unnecessarily.
You can pass that out later.
Okay.
All right. Councillor Craddock.
I just want to say thank you to Councillor Stacey and staff for finding a creative way for us to support the challenges that those of you that live in Van Hill County were having. And it really was very creative. And so thank you so much for that work and for staff for supporting you in that and coming up with this opportunity and this solution. So glad to be able to vote for this today.
Councilor Lewis.
So Councilor Stacey first told me about these challenges in 2014, and I guarantee he doesn't remember that conversation. But I've been waiting since January for us to come full circle and this capacity issue to be in front of us. So thank you to him for being a champion, but also looking at this action in front of us today as a newbie who is kind of implementing policy decisions that were made years ahead of being here, this is us taking action as a region to be a good neighbor to a broader region. And, I'm part of the Willamette Falls Locks Commission, where we're sitting there with Yamhill and Marion counties talking about what is regionalism, but not through our strict lens of just the three counties we work with. So, as so much of what we're talking about every day is being a good neighbor city to city here within Metro, I'm really proud of the work that we're doing and kind of pushing the boundaries on being a good neighbor on behalf of the, northwest part of the state.
You're here.
Nicely said. Anything else? Councillor Chase.
Yeah, I can't turn down the opportunity to thank Councillor Stacey also for really and the community of folks that have really come and been part of this process to help educate us as a council. Generally, closing down a landfill is not something you want to do lightly because there are environmental issues on all sides of it. And I think what we have done is go through a really thoughtful process of understanding the issues, the challenges, the leachate, the conditions of the river, the affordability issues with mobile home parks. There are a whole host of issues that make this, such a important decision and thing to do. And the point that we are at now where there is not opposition to this, that we have come to a point where we've really been able to have our larger community educated and embracing this decision, I think is a testament to the engagement of our community, to Councillor Stacey's leadership on this issue and really stepping up and saying we are going to solve this. He was not willing to just kind of let it go, but which could have been an easy route to go. He really made sure that this continued to get shepherded through the process, and a lot of appreciation for that, of course, for staff and as well for it. But the community also really coming, making that trip to Metro over and over and over again to make sure that we were understanding. Well, it's much appreciated. It's much appreciated. It's an example of how things can really, you get the best product when you do things right. So thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Gonzalez.
It's already rush hour, so I might as well.
No.
Well, thank you so much for coming all the way in. I'll echo Councillor Lewis's comments as a newbie, what it's like to implement a policy that's been worked on for a very long time and to now have the opportunity to take the credit. But also to thank Councillor Stacey. I think many examples of leadership and of just doing the right thing. So thank you, sir. Honored to serve with you.
Gracias.
And I will just add that no matter where Councillor Stacey has served, he will always be a friend of Oregon Land Use Planning Program.
in the big sense, and of the Friends of Yamhill County. So he has always had a keen eye on that, so thank you. And thank you both for being here. And I will ask the, if there's no further discussion, ask the clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. It passes. Thank
Say
you.
Say hi to Sid.
Thank you again.
All right. We're moving on to the last part of our agenda. We have several ordinances for second reading. First will be ordinance number 19-1438. For the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 5.00 to update certain terms and definitions, is the first reading, or the first reading and public hearing for this ordinance took place on Thursday, November 7th, 2019. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I'll let you duke it out down there. motion was made by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor Craddock. Is there any further discussion? We do have staff here to answer any questions, if there are any questions. If not, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. It passes. Thank you. We now move to ordinance for the second reading of ordinance number 19-1439 for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 5.02 to improve clarity, remove outdated sections, and remove sections related to Metro transfer station fees. The first reading and public hearing for this ordinance took place on Thursday, November 7, 2019. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
I'll second.
Adoption, excuse me.
Moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Dirksen. Is there any further discussion? We do have staff if necessary. Nope. Seeing none, clerk can call the roll.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. Passes. Thank you. Ordinance number 19-1440 for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 5.03 that governs solid waste fees at Metro transfer stations. The first reading and public hearing for this ordinance took place on Thursday, November 7th, 2019. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Seconded.
Moved by Councillor Lewis and seconded by Councillor Gonzalez. Again, if there are any questions, now would be the time, and we do have staff available. Seeing none, the clerk can call the roll.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. It passes. Thank you. Ordinance number 19-1441, for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 5.08 that governs administrative rulemaking authority for Metro Code Title 5. The first reading and public hearing for this ordinance took place on Thursday, November 7th, 2019. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
And moved by Councillor Craddock and seconded by Councillor Stacey. Again, any questions, comments? Staff is here if necessary. Just waiting to see. All right. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. It passes. Thank you. We are updated and revised and edited. So thank you very much for all that hard work. And we'll move on to start implementing now. All right. Mr. Scott.
Thank you. I have one quick item today. And I know we've talked a lot about the Convention Center remodel and the Convention Center hotel over the last few weeks. But I do think it's worth remarking because it is such a major, they're both major projects and will have a major impact on the region. Today, both projects were honored by the Portland Business Journal's Commercial Real Estate Transformer Awards. These awards recognize the top 20 projects in the greater Portland area which are transforming the area's commercial real estate scene by leading the way in design, function, and or impact or regional development. So it was kind of fun to go and see all the projects, but actually these two, and maybe I'm biased, but these two really stood out for me in terms of all of the 20 projects that were on the list. The OCC renovation was recognized because of the social equity focus that Metro had throughout the entire contract and renovation process, and of course the Hyatt Regency Portland was selected because of its impact on the overall regional economy. And then separate from these awards, we did just find out today that the Hyatt Regency Portland is going to achieve LEED Gold status. And that's exciting because we only require them to achieve LEED Silver. So we expected LEED Silver. They were going to meet that, and they've actually gone above and beyond and met LEED Gold status, which is great.
You have any idea what pushed them into the next category? Like what the big thing was?
I don't know, but no. I can maybe find out a little bit more, yeah.
Was the carpet was suddenly greener? I mean, it could be something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, exciting news.
All right. Thank you. Yep. Councillor Communications, who would like to start, if anybody? Councillor Dirksen?
Very briefly. Yesterday, the Audit Committee received our annual independent audit report from our outside auditor, and the good news is that nobody's going to jail. We did well. And
that's a low bar.
Yeah. And so there's, yeah, good news. And but the council will actually be receiving the report and have the opportunity to accept it on December 5th.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Craig. Any other? Councilor Lewis?
I just wanted to report back that our good friends in Oregon City passed their food scrap policy in second reading last night.
True. Awesome.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Nice.
Nice
just
work.
Just one jurisdiction left, I hear.
Yes,
I'm not saying that.
All right.
We're just one away from a completed task. Any other?
We're struggling to remember all the items on the JPAC agenda this morning.
Oh,
so Dirksen,
too long ago.
Oh,
yeah.
It was long ago.
Councilor Craddock, do you want
to? Well, yes. So this morning, the JPAC met for their monthly meeting. Critical or important this meeting is the presentation around TPAC's presentation or not presentation, but their recommendation regarding regional flexible funds. So there was discussion today, but I think the region is coming together and there's going to be three projects that are moving forward, one in each county. So I'm particularly thinking about active transportation, so excuse me. So that was one of the items of this morning. The other one is Kim Ellis was updating us on the mobility policy that the region is working on and the work that she's doing. And then there was a third item on the agenda that at this moment I don't remember. Councilor Dirksen, what did I overlook?
Well, we had a presentation on the Boone Bridge potential widening and strengthening program. And there were some remarks made by a couple of us about being careful about the potential spillover effects of added capacity southbound across the Willamette River into our rural reserves in Clackamas County and the Willamette Valley farmland beyond to ensure that whatever steps ODOT can take in the design of that project improvement, which would add an exit lane in the reconfiguration of the western part of the bridge, would not cause induced trips that serve development. It particularly mentioned was the possibility of industrial development outside the footprint of the Aurora Airport. Mayor Knapp pointed out that both his city and Aurora had already objected to steps to finalize the plan for that area because of its incursion onto about 50 acres of farmland. So this isn't an abstract concept. We have to be very careful about how we provide access to rural areas so close to the urban growth.
So just as a follow-up, I think staff and I will be talking directly to the ODOT director about this project and making it extremely clear. This is the third rail of this region's Oregon Land Use Planning Program implementation, and going south of the river is not on anybody's plan, and neither should it be. And so while there might have been legislative direction to do a study to expand it, there's got to be some criteria set around that and what that means, because my understanding is that ODOT staff were saying that land use was not in their purview, and we all know that
there are land use impacts to transportation investments. So that's why we are having an anti-displacement policy in our transportation package, is because we recognize that and we want to work on that. So.
And Madam President, at least two governors have directed the Oregon Transportation Commission to consider themselves a land use agency as well as a transportation.
Yeah, like almost every governor since, yes. So with that.
Actually, probably worthy of note, one of the things on the JPACT agenda, in the consent agenda, was a recommendation from JPACT to coming to this council to approve some amendments to the MTIP, one of those being to approve funding for further study of the Columbia River crossing.
Yes, which is going to be my update.
The I-5 bridge replacement project?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. I just thought I'd give a quick update. I think you all saw what
bridge
was
formerly known as.
I think you all saw what was in the news at the beginning of the week, that both Governor Inslee and Governor Brown signed basically a memorandum of understanding for moving forward, how much would be spent by both states and what would be covered. I was there to support the conversation moving forward, because as of right now, there are just two legislative committees that are coming together to talk about this, with some invited, you know, regional participation, but only in the sense of just being there, but not being a part of the actual decision making. And I feel like Governor Brown, in her remarks to a smaller group, was quite clear that that was not the last step. That would not be the last of how the structure of decision making would be put together. And she reiterated a lot of what was in our letter back to us. But what I made clear to the entire table and both governors is that this council makes decisions with two lenses, climate change and racial equity. And as we move forward with what does the bridge look like in design and its impacts, as well as how that impacts I-5, congestion pricing is something that we're very interested in, its diversionary impacts, and that they cannot just take off the table and leave I-205 off the table, because a lot of the displacement that's happened in the region with our communities of color is to and around I-205. So we are not going to move more congestion off of I-5 and put it onto I-205 and not see a decrease in GHG emissions. So I think that that was an interesting conversation that resulted after that, wanting to know what Washingtonians would see out of benefits for congestion pricing. But what was made clear by both governors is whatever's raised in that area is going to stay in this area. It's not going to other parts of Washington or Oregon. It will stay in the region. And also that the benefit to Washingtonians is having a predictable commute, which they do not have right now. So there is improvements that can be made off of any revenue created from congestion pricing, but also that a predictable commute for a long term is probably a very good thing. So just wanted to let you know we are working to make sure the entire region has a voice at the table.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is that it? Any legal updates? No. Just thought I'd ask. It's a long meeting. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.